Hey, Cap.
I'd like to call this meeting to order. Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I will now take roll call. Ms. Herrera.
Here.
Welcome back. Ms. Kiefer.
Present.
Mr. Lane.
Here.
Ms. McAsee.
Present.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Mr. McKenna.
Here.
Mr. Proto.
Here.
Ms. Pryor.
Here.
Ms. Robertson.
Here.
Mr. Robinson.
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa.
Here.
Mr. Stein will be arriving a little late this evening. Mr. Burbank.
I'm here.
Ms. Chalk will also be arriving a little late this evening. Mr. Dennis.
Here.
We have 13 members present. The proclamation this evening will be read following the elections. And the first order of business is the election of temporary chairman. And I will now open the floor for nominations. Ms. Robertson.
I would like to nominate a distinguished legislator from Danby, Carolina, and a little bit of the town of Ithaca to be temporary chair, Frank Proto.
Is there a second? Mr. Lane? Are there any other nominations? May I have a motion to close nominations? Mr. Dennis?
So
seconded by Ms. McAsee. All those in favor of closing nominations, please signify with aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Carried. I will now ask for a vote for temporary chair, electing Frank Proto. Please signify with aye.
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 Opposed?
There's no discussion.
Would you like to discuss?
No.
Mr. Proto?
Things to say about you.
I want to abstain.
Mr. Proto, would you please take the chair?
Everybody needed a bathroom break right in that moment. It's a coffee break.
Oh. Didn't we do this last year? Are we going to do a repeat? Good evening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Nice to see you all again. I hope you had a pleasant holiday and a safe one. Paula has already chastised me because the gift that was on its way to her has not arrived. And I just wanted to apologize publicly for the fruit that you asked for, pomegranates. And, oh, well, I'll see that you get those, Paula. The usual Christmas list, or holiday list, as it may be, is a little sparse this year. Joe is a little stingy, and David was worse with certain things. But I just wanted to let you know that we took a vote among ourselves, and Joe is going to get an extra large, you know, one of those large canisters of no-dos. Simply because he spends every day and every night and most of the weekend in his office. What he does, I don't know. But I see his car there a lot. Jim led us through the budget season with David's help. And they're under my desk, but I brought two antique, Nathan probably doesn't know what this is, but two antique abacuses so that you guys can use them.
Did you use an abacus when you were in school?
Slide rule.
I haven't been invented yet.
Yeah.
I have. How many? Hey, Mike, how many slide rules do you have? I have about six slide rules. That's something I don't think Nathan's ever seen.
Yeah.
But Nathan, what I brought for you, and it's out in the hall, mm-hmm. is a Series 1 Mac. Mm-hmm. because I thought that you might be able to utilize that. It's easy to handle. It's about as easy as, you know, that tablet that you have.
Yeah, but it was probably like two or three when it came out, so yeah.
I don't know. Dooley wanted something unique, so we got her a whole series of red and blue pens because of her ability to pick on all of us. Say again?
To lose them?
Did we lose them?
No, I lose them.
You
so
lose
thank
them? Well, you.
You
know, we figured you could use them, right? Martha, you know, Martha is so shy that it was, this was a tough one. But we got her a subscription to Time Warner that will only do emails between 2 and 4 in the morning. So that, well, I mean, how many times have we contributed to that, right? Jonathan is getting an abridged copy of Robert's Rules because of the work that you've done in the past.
Okay. If we could keep it to less than a page, that would be good.
How about less than a paragraph? Kathy Herrera, we're so glad to see you. You know, and I'm glad Brian introduced himself because I know that it was a tough one. Because Kathy was unable to make so many meetings, we asked Kathy Covert and Michelle to save all of the paperwork.
And I'm going to use them very well. I hear that there's a recycling effort that takes old agendas and makes them into insulation for homes. People that need them, so I'll definitely be putting those to good use.
Whatever
keep
works.
Keep our carbon footprint down.
Whatever works, right? Beyond that, you know, I picked on Pam all year, and Pam was happy to get the bus tokens from the tram in Seattle, but they've expired, but I think you can get them extended, Pam. Yeah.
I thought I'd make a bracelet out of them.
You could. Necklace. Right?
Necklace.
Peter Stein. I saw Peter just walk in, so I'm glad that you made it, Peter. The gift list for this year, I wanted you to have a copy of Committee Reports Made Easy because of the ability that you have. Even when you don't have a report, you give a report, and we thought it might be wise to have this sort of categorized. So it would make it easy for this year, for the rest of us, too.
Well, thank you. Anything that makes anything easier is good.
Oh, that's good. The rest of you I spared. Brian, I know Brian is relatively withdrawn on a lot of issues. And some of us know that he weighs in, even though he doesn't want to. But we got him a charter membership in the Canine Society because the new unit that the sheriff is starting, and with your ability with City Hall, because I know in your other life you have something to do there, we decided that you would need a canine unit, and the Chihuahua should be arriving at any time. Will, you got off light this year.
Oh, good.
I mean, it's Will that keeps making our health committee meetings 5 minutes late, so we decided we would get him a digital clock that he could use in the classroom. And along with Pat, I mean, I've had a good year with Pat this year. You know, Pat used to be does a teacher ever retire, Pat?
You're always a teacher.
You're always a teacher, right?
Yep.
Pat has been accused of being a school marm from time to time, and some of us have had a good time with that one. But, Dave, I'm sorry, but the cows on your farm, you ever see an Oreo cow? The black and white that goes the other way. We got your pictures. Okay. And Leslin, my sparring partner.
I love
Leslin
you too, Frank.
Pardon me?
I love you too, Frank.
Okay, well, Joe Mariana wanted to know if Mike Lane would referee a match between you and I. So I turned to Mike. What do you think?
I charge by the hour.
You do.
Nice comeback.
At any rate, Happy New Year. And, you know, often I try to adjourn the meeting right about now. And I know that I'll never get a second for that. So we'll just pass.
Well, you may.
We may. We may. Should we try it? Hi, Carol. I didn't see you sneak in.
I had a gallant ride from Peter.
You had a gallant ride from who?
Peter.
Where did Peter go?
I don't know. He dropped me off and left. I was raising my hand for the second.
Trading places.
For what? To adjourn?
I was seconding your motion.
To adjourn? It's nice that you're mobile, really. Okay. The order of business, according to Kathy Colbert, who's giving me signals, the five-minute rule. Do we have the five-minute rule? We are supposed to conduct an election for chair at this point, and I usually ask Jonathan if it is appropriate for us to do it by, and he defers to you, so I'll ask him again about whether we do it by secret ballot or by a show of hands. My understanding is if we do it by a written secret ballot, we still have to sign or at least attest to how we voted, so it becomes public. Is that correct, John?
That is correct. You're not allowed to have, it's a violation of the open meetings law to vote secretively.
Okay. So it doesn't seem to make sense to do it by secret ballot, unless you folks would rather do that. I would consider us doing it by a show of hands. Is that okay with you?
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, the two people that I left off the list were Michelle and Kathy. They've both asked to be excused at this point. So, I'd like to open up nominations for chairman of the county legislature for the year 2013. Pam?
Yes, I'd like to nominate Mike Lane for chair of the legislature. Mike has served for 15 years on the Thompson County legislature. He's chaired at least 10 committees, and some of them more than once. The Planning Committee, F&I, Charter Review, Urban Rural Development, and more recently he's chaired the GO and Capital Plan Review. And on those committees, he has shown leadership qualities that throughout. He's an excellent chair. He gets the job done, and he works well with many different kinds of people. Mike was, in addition to all his leadership roles on the county legislature, he was the mayor of Dryden for 10 years. He took a leadership role in setting up the Dryden Flood Control Program, the Dryden Lake Park, the trails that are so beautiful trails out in Dryden. He works hard and is organized and has a clear vision of what county government should be. So I am pleased and honored to nominate Mike Lane as chair for the committee, as chair of the legislature.
Sorry. Is there a second? Seconded by Dooley.
Yeah, I'd like to agree with everything Pam said. I've been on the legislature a long time, and I've seen Mike handle duties very well. I also think that there are a handful of folks on the legislature who have not been here many years and have not seen people, other chairs for the legislature. We have had periods in our history when not many persons were interested in standing up to be chair, and some chairs have served a long time. But we're fortunate to have a choice now, and my personal belief is that there is no reason, since we elect chair every year, to assume that someone is going to be chair for a full four-year term as we serve our legislative terms. I think it's appropriate to, I guess the word is, rotate from time to time among qualified, interested people. And I'm content to support Mike. I'm enthusiastic to support Mike because I know that Martha's devotion to stopping fracking, among other things, will continue on our behalf, whatever position she's in. And I hope that that's what's going to happen.
Thank you, Dewey. David, did you want to add a third?
No.
Okay, so officially, Mike Lane's name has been put in nomination for chair. Nathan, did I see your hand up?
Yes, that's right.
Go ahead.
All right. I would like to nominate Martha Robertson for chair of the legislature. I've had the very good fortune of being able to serve as Martha's vice chair over this past year. And although I was quite busy throughout the year, Martha always found, Martha and Joe worked very, very hard to accommodate my schedule to make sure I could attend as many of these meetings as possible. And at our chair and vice chair meetings, I was always surprised at how many issues were on the agenda, 20 different issues in any given moment, where Martha had a strong pulse of what was going on. But what was interesting is that, and I think different from in previous years, is that Martha had a pulse of what was going on, but that pulse was not necessarily her running the show. It was actually her knowing what committees were working on what, whether it was on the budget committee, and we had a successful budget year, thank you, Jim, you know, with a unanimous budget that was passed here, right? We also had, we've had very tough stances against fracking, and many legislators have taken the lead on that. We also had committees that, you know, Mike Lane chaired, for example, that had an independent redistricting commission. And in all these efforts, it was individual legislators that took the lead. Oh, Pat's Broadband Committee, I think, is another one, too. You know, and you see that individual legislators took the lead. But Martha was there as a guiding force, I believe, all of that, empowering legislators throughout this past year. And I think that's been one of the strong points about her leadership, especially in this past year in the legislature. Also, you know, I've seen firsthand how Martha works, of course, and we all know this, as hard as anybody I know. And whether it's economic development issues or fracking, I mean, whether it's an issue that she's absolutely passionate about or not passionate about at all, she still works hard because she knows that that's her duty. That's something that I greatly respect. I also believe that Martha has a very strong vision for the future, especially in a few key areas. And two of those, and those two areas are economic development and our fight against fracking. And when it came to economic development, Martha has absolutely taken a lead with the regional economic development councils. You know, you remember the first year that the grants were awarded, we in the southern tier could have done better. It was a tough year. But Martha immediately recognized how important that these grants were going to be for the economic future of this region. And so then in the second year, took a very strong leadership role, and actually most notably helping organize the workshop that was done at the Holiday Inn, right, where it was a jam-packed room where we actually had people teaching folks how to apply for these grants. And I think we saw with the grant award that we got this past year the fruits of that of those efforts. And that's huge. That's dollars from the state that are coming into our community. That's our tax dollars coming back here. And that's something that Martha played a very, very strong role on. And then second is fracking, the fight against fracking. I believe that this next year is going to be absolutely crucial in the fight against fracking. And Martha has continued to be a leader. But what's interesting is that, and I've traveled across the southern tier, people don't say it's Martha Robertson that's leading the efforts against fracking. They say it's Tompkins County leading the effort against fracking. And I think she's done a very good job, right, while still being out there of not making it about her, but actually making it about this movement and preserving our communities. And that's been something that's been so, I think, strong. And I think you've seen, too, with the elected officials from across the southern tier, especially in these very conservative areas, that have jumped on board on the fight against fracking and call Martha Robertson as one of their resources. I can think of, for example, Sue Skidmore, the mayor of Elmira, as one of those folks. So I believe that, in conclusion, I believe that internally You know, we've had a very good year, and it's something that I would like us to continue, that committee chairs have been empowered, that legislators have been empowered, and I think Martha will continue that over the next year. And then also externally, in terms of the fight against fracking and also our economic development, Martha's been a strong leader. And for those reasons, I would like to nominate her today, and I hope that you, many of you will join me, and that hopefully all of you will join me in supporting Martha for chair.
Thank you, Nathan. Is there a second? Will.
And I would be delighted to join you in supporting Martha and seconding her nomination. As I was trying to think what I could say tonight, I was trying to think, okay, you know, we spend many hours together. What can I say that you don't already know about Martha? We know she is a very strong woman. She has been described as a warrior sometimes and goes out and fights the good fight, certainly in fracking, but in many other realms. And what I've found is that when Martha stands up before a group of people, be it, you know, a small committee or a group of several hundred, she commands attention and she represents what she believes, but also the county in a very best light. I have always had full confidence that when she speaks, something positive will happen. There have been concerns in the past that, you know, sometimes she brought that phrase, amazing energy, and sometimes found it hard to tone it down internally. And one of the things I think I've observed over the past year is Martha demonstrating another skill, which is her ability to learn. Last year there were some criticisms made that she was maybe showing up at too many committee meetings and too enthusiastic. I saw her really pull back on that this year. I had the honor of chairing a committee this time, and I found nothing but support, but no intrusion, and I really, really appreciated her thoughtful help when it mattered. We all know Martha is a tireless worker. Sending out emails. You know, I'm always impressed that she will send out an email at 1:50 or 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'm really impressed that it will have no typos. You know, I can't do that, you know, under the best of...
And then they email at 6 in the morning, like 4 hours later, also won't have typos.
Exactly. So, and I can reach her early in the morning, and she's coherent. I don't know when she sleeps, but I do know that the energy is given us collectively and the county, the citizens of county, has just been enormous. I think it's fortunate that we have two very good people running. I have to disagree with my good friend Dooley on this particular case. I think that this coming year will be absolutely pivotal. We need a Martha as the state moves toward its critical decision on fracking, and I really, really hope that you will join Nathan and me and support her for chair this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Brian?
No.
Are there any other nominations? Kathy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
At this time, I'd like to put into consideration the nomination for Leslie McBean Claiborne, and I'll tell you why. I've served with Leslie the entire time I've been on the legislature. She has consistently and modestly shown a collaborative spirit that's inclusive and that is really smart. She understands the plight of not just working people, but also people that are in the aspiring middle class, people that are leaders in the community, and she can work with all of them. She has connections all over this country. I don't know if y'all know that. And she commands the respect of countless people throughout, not just this organization and at the state level, but throughout the country. I believe that what would help us move forward at this time, including in the effort on fracking, which we have many capable proponents and I think that Leslie would be someone who would support their efforts in addition to moving them forward. But I think what we need more than anything right now is somebody who will speak to everyone with respect and who knows administrative work and the kind of administrative work that calls people to action in a way that is joyous, as my friend Riri used to say, joyful and inclusive. I admit that I admire Leslin, not just the least of her, because of her public speaking skills and her temperament, but also because of her heart. No one who knows Leslin doubts that she has the good of everyone in mind and that she takes the most direct path to accomplish her goals. That, in public life, is something truly to be admired, and it's something to be emulated. And this comes to the most important reason that I'm nominating Leslin Bean Claiborne for chair of the legislature, and that is Leslin's a terrific role model. We talk about how we hate the way the national government is and the way there's gridlock at the federal level and at the state level. And I believe that some of this comes from not just partisan bickering, but a way of playing partisan games such as building a power base by enforcing party rules and such. You won't find Leslin doing that. There's not an ounce of retribution in her body. She understands that the way to motivate people is with positive action and by encouraging the best efforts and of everyone. I'm going to stop now because I could go on a long time. You all know how I feel about this, and I think she's the best candidate for chair. This isn't the first time I've nominated her. You also know that she served as vice chair up until a few years ago when we had a very interesting interaction that I'd like to put behind us. I believe that voting for Leslin Bean Claiborne for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature would go 100% of the way toward showing our community that we're ready to move on into a future, which is actually now, when women and minorities make up the majority of, well, in some states, the legislatures, and across the country, you could say that we're coming to represent the majority of voters. Leslin's somebody that I admire, and I hope you'll consider voting for her for chair of the Tompkins County Legislature.
Thank you, Kathy. Is there a second? Leslin.
Frank, before you go there, Kathy always moved me to tears. And I think I always say this, that when I get into higher office, and yes, you can take that as a declaration of intent, you will be my speechwriter, or at least my rah-rah, whichever it is. Thank you very much. But in as much as I'd love to sit in the chair up there and be chair of this body, I know that my schedule as it is, as a working woman, as a working class woman with a very young family, does not allow me to do that and do it well. And the way that I would want to represent you all as chair of this body. And so I unfortunately, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart, have to respectfully and sincerely and with all my heart decline your nomination for chair of this body.
Now you're making me to tears.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for chair of the legislature? Before I ask for a motion to close the nominations, I want to mention that I'd like, if it's okay with you, I'd like to continue with a practice that we started last year in asking any candidate to give us a couple of minutes of what they might have in mind as they chair this legislature. So I hope that's okay with Martha and Mike. Leslin, I would have loved to have said, and Leslin.
You can say that.
Would you reconsider?
It just feels good when you say Leslin. It's so somber around this room right
now,
so just keep bringing
it.
You can say Leslin.
Let me give you something to laugh about before we close the nominations. I forgot to mention one other gift. Myself. Greg Potter sent me a texting dictionary so that I can move into the, what is this, the 22nd century? And I was telling Brian earlier today, and I will bring it in so you can see it, even though I don't know how to use it. I got a Christmas gift that looks a lot like one of these in a case. So shortly you'll be seeing me. I know how to open it. But beyond that, Potter is going to give me lessons on
the
how
first
to
step
use
is the hardest.
A laptop. So.
Well, LOL, Frank.
That's, and it's in here. It's in here. Okay. May we have a motion to close nominations? Made by Jim, seconded by Brian. All those in favor of closing nominations?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We're going to do this by... L comes before R, or should we let women go before men? We need for each of you to give us a couple of minutes on what you plan to do. Why don't you go first?
Order of the nomination.
Pardon me?
The order of the nomination. Maybe Mike should go first.
All right. Order of the nomination. Mike, would you give us a little rundown on your plan?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you to Pam, and thank you to Dooley for moving my name and seconding that. I sincerely appreciate that. The happiest thing that I have to say tonight is that all 15 seats are filled. And it's been a long time since we've had that. We've had serious illnesses here and injuries and that have made it so that all 15 couldn't be here. And I think it's a really important thing for this legislature, for our team, that we are back to full strength, hopefully tonight, and hopefully it will continue. And everybody else, please stay healthy and don't be careful in Wegmans parking lot and other parking lots. I like our system of county government, and we've looked at different ones around the state in the past. We've looked at boards of supervisors. We've looked at county executive models. And we have a system which is run by a legislature, similar in some ways to a parliament, and an appointed administrator. Power resides in the committees. And that in itself, in the county structure itself, can empower each of us as a part of the team. And I think it should. I think we need to use the committees on a regular basis. It takes a little more time sometimes to move something that a chair or a chair of the legislature or a county administrator thinks would be a good idea. It's a little more cumbersome because you generally have five people on a committee, and that means bringing them along, having a committee meeting, seeing that it happens. But people are informed, and when we do it that way and we mind the details, I think it means that each person here can feel that he or she is effective and that his or her vote counts equally as it should. The chair of the legislature is only the first among equals, not a county executive, has certain a certain role under the charter that we have, among them setting up the committees and making appointments and being the chief elected official for ceremonial and other purposes. That person needs to set by example a careful adherence to the county charter system. And I would do that if I'm elected. A chair should speak less and listen more. When he or she sits at the podium and handles a meeting, it's important that we move our business along, that we have fair debate, but that we don't have prolonged debate. I think sometimes in the past we've gone on much too long with various kinds of resolutions. I think that needs to be tightened up a little bit so that, first of all, the others who are not debating it do not lose interest. And second, so that everyone has a fair chance but does not monopolize the conversation or debate. There are issues that I would like very much to move along. We know we're in a recession. We're probably still there, certainly, although some indicators are better. Real estate sales right now are not great. The job market We know where our underemployment, our employment is probably underreported, our unemployment, I should say. People point to us, but we have many people in this county that are in line at the food giveaways. They are in line at the unemployment office. They're in line making applications at the workforce development. And we cannot forget about them. Our county role as an arm of the state, and that's how we're treated. We saw our tax bills come out and say that 74% of our county taxes go towards state mandates. And some of those state mandates are helping folks who need it through Medicaid, helping folks who need it through social services programs, and it may be mental health, youth services, other things. We've had to cut back or reduce some of that even when the need has been greater. And we need to redouble our efforts to try to make sure that that balance is there, that we're doing for the people that can least afford it the best we can. We need to be ever mindful of the issues of diversity, and we always pay attention to it. We're always frustrated by the lack of progress. We look at our workforce reports every month in the Budget Committee, Budget and Personnel Committee, and we often would like to see a stronger picture in our workforce mimicking better the actual diversity across our county. We can't hesitate to continue working for that, and we need to come up with various ideas. Economic development in this county, we talked about it in the budget. I don't think we've been doing as good a job as we ought to. TCAD is in trouble. We need to help TCAD. I've recommended that we put some tax money into it. We can't help one arm of economic development by hurting another, and when I say that, I'm talking about the room tax tourism money, because certainly tourism is one of the strongest economic development programs that we have in this county. TC3 is another area that is in need of help because they've had to raise tuition for our young people. It's an economic development driver, and we need to make sure that they're protected. And our libraries, who people turn to from everything from internet services to books and places to help learn to write a resume, to help to run their cell phone or their computer. People need libraries even more when times are bad. And our library has a structural deficit. We have to figure out how to close that deficit. That's an important thing that we have to do. We have infrastructure issues here. We have to be vigilant about our bridges, our highways. I think in the time I've been on the legislature that our highways are not in as good condition as they were 10, 15 years ago, simply because of the number of miles that we have and the amount of money that we have to be able to spend on them. We have to be smarter, but we can't short the highway department or the bridge department any more than and we can short our facilities. If we build buildings, we've got to be able to maintain them, whether it's the air conditioners or the custodial staff or whatever we do. We also have to worry about public safety. We have a jail that's in problems. It doesn't have enough space that we can work with our inmates there. We have to make sure that the HVAC units are working, that we have sufficient room for people without inviting the local legal system to add inmates when it may not be necessary simply because there's room. We have to be very careful about that. But we can't have a building that's inadequate either. I think that as we go along, I believe that change is good. I think that's why our charter asks us every year to reexamine who our chair and vice chair is. I think change is healthy. I think that every person on this legislature is capable of being chair and or vice chair. It may not be as easy for one person as another person to be able to fit that into the rest of their lives because of the fact that we are part-time elected officials and we have to have jobs outside. But it doesn't mean that we aren't capable and aren't interested in what we're doing. And to have more people in that position, I don't think people should stay there for a long time. The same with committee chairs and vice chairs. I think there should be effective change. Does that mean changing everybody every year? Probably not. But it should be recognizing that there is a lot of talent here and seeing how we can put that to use as much as possible. Those are some of the things I'd like to do next year if I'm elected as chair. It's a privilege to serve with each of you, and I'd be glad to answer questions if that's what folks would like to do after we hear from Martha.
Thank you, Mike. Martha?
Thank you, Frank, and many thanks to Nathan and Will for those really great remarks. I'm really humbled by the things that you've said and appreciate that. And I appreciate everybody's work, collaborative work, the last 3 years. I think this has been an important 3 years, and I've been really honored, very honored, and pleased to be able to be chair. And I make no assumptions about, you know, length of time or, you know, just because I've had 3 years that I should have another year. I'm pleased to be required to earn election this year as well as every other year. I feel we've accomplished a lot together, and just to go briefly over a couple of things. We have kind of two different kinds of work. There's the ongoing work, the stuff that comes to us every year, that staff brings to us, and it's really important that we make sure that it's done right, it's done well, that there's accountability, that the taxpayers' dollars are used well. And there are the things that are sort of more legislative initiatives. I think in the ongoing work, I would put top of the list diversity and inclusion as something that we've just got to do better at. And I think that, you know, I would, Mike, you took the words out of my mouth from a recent meeting about being frustrated on the monthly jobs reports, that the numbers just, we can't seem to move the needle. That is tough to do in times when our staff is actually shrinking. But that's not an excuse. We have to be more creative and redouble our efforts. On the work that sort of the legislative initiative, when I stop and think about where we were 3 years ago, we didn't know where COFA was going to go, and we had the court system breathing down our necks. You know, let's get off the dime. You know, they need the space in this building. So I've been pleased to work with the Capital Plan Review Committee and then the full legislature on a series of really complicated decisions. And, you know, importantly, the staff has done so much work on how do we move from one place to another, and there have been really dominoes falling. And I think we should all sort of pat ourselves on the back for the fact that we've made a lot of decisions. We've made these things happen. COFA is about to move into its new space. We have one or two big decisions left, but a vision to go forward to complete all these dominoes. I think that's been a big job that we should all feel good about having completed, including the 20-year capital plan, the revision on that plan. If that discretionary time and attention is being completed, what can we turn our attention to? And I would like to elevate economic development and a comprehensive, aggressive approach to energy issues. Two areas that I think, with some restructuring of our committees this year, perhaps an economic development committee and have a PDEC committee have more time to focus on energy issues and collaborative work. I even have, and I haven't been able to vet this with many people yet, but an idea of an energy fund like our housing fund, where we partner with the city and the county, the city and the, and Cornell, for example, and have projects come to us for funding that is a way to make more things available in the community. So I have a number of ideas. I think there's more, you know, we've got great staff, and TCD is a great agency, and tourism, and TC3 and the WIB working hard, but I think we need to, we maybe have the energy and the time now to devote in a concentrated way to economic development and also to alternative energy. So that's kind of some of the ideas I have for the next year. As far as what I think I've tried very hard to do is to be somebody who almost leads from behind. I mean, to make sure that people know what's going on and that I'm not out there in front. And often I've done a check with myself about issues. Am I speaking on, you know, about my ideas, or is this something that the full legislature has really bought into? And I've tried to make sure that I'm doing that. The chair's job is to make absolutely sure that all points of view are heard, that people are listened to, that we've examined all options. For example, in the space moves for COFA is one example of, you know, taking time to look at all the options and really listen to everybody. And then, but also to know how and when to sort of move people towards making a decision, and hoping that it's the right decision that has as much consensus as possible. So that's a little bit about kind of how I see the role, and a little bit about some ideas for going forward for the coming year. And would be grateful to have your support for this one more year. So thank you. Be happy to answer questions also.
Thank you, Martha. Are there any questions for either of the candidates that have been nominated? Pam?
Well, yeah, I actually had a question for Mike. I wanted to clarify something. Mike, in the past I've heard you talk about that if you were chair, that there would be a role for in terms of the fracking issue and for Martha, because she's had played such a tremendous role in that.
Glad you asked that question. I'm from Dryden, and Dryden has been in the forefront of anti-fracking, and I'm proud of that fact. And Tompkins County has been in the forefront of that as well, because we know all the issues. I don't have to inform you. We've had a wonderful team effort on fracking. Martha's done a great job leading that. She's made a lot of headway in Albany. She has talked to a lot of people. She's on a first-name basis with many of them. And that's a good thing, and I hope we wouldn't lose that. And I would very much, as chair, like to go to Martha and ask her to continue in a role, whether it's our special ambassador or whatever, that she thought would be useful. I haven't talked to her about this, but because I thought it'd be presumptuous of me, because we haven't voted on the chair yet. But I don't think we should lose that.
Will?
Well, I'd like to build on that, and I guess I'd like to ask Martha, have you found that carrying the title of chair has helped you in your effort on that issue and others statewide? And you know, would it in any way diminish your ability to do those things if you were not in this position?
I'm afraid so. I mean, I know everybody that it would diminish that. I know Carol and Pam and others have also been active on this issue and very effective too. But I think it says something more significant to be speaking as the chair of the legislature. I mean, people don't know what liaison means or whatever other title. I mean, people know what chair means. And so, you know, I think there's no question. I've been both. I've been active at NYSAC before I was chair of the legislature, and since I've been chair, and I can tell you there's a big difference. And not just on fracking. I mean, there's I think there would be definitely a loss. I mean, I was appointed to several committees at NYSAC on Medicaid and Medicaid redesign, et cetera. I don't think, as a legislator, I would have been considered for those positions.
Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to ask either Dewey?
I'm sorry that I didn't hear either candidate address the problem I think we have in terms of our ability to comply with FOIL requests with respect to our email system. I think that we are on borrowed time with that, and I noticed that recently the state comptroller decided that to audit IT as one of the many ongoing audits. I don't know whether any of those suggestions are particularly helpful, but I hope that there is going to be some focus in that, and I'd like to hear what each candidate thinks we can do about that in this next year.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really pleased that we last year had the retreat about technology, you know, within the county, and I know that the group's been working through the year on that, and look forward to hearing more about it maybe at the next retreat. You know, where are we and what kinds of initiatives have been carried out and what's been proposed. On the email system, I think that is not part of why they did the upgrade of GroupWise, you know, a couple of weeks ago. That audit of by the comptroller's office, what happened was was this Schoharie County, David? There was another small county where they offered IT services to some maybe all the towns in the county, unpaid. That the county just said, here, we're going to provide, and forgive me for not remembering the details, we're going to provide staff support, and you're going to have, you know, you're going to be on our server and all these things, and we're just going to give you that. And, of course, it saved the town's money. Well, it also cost the county money, presumably. So somebody in the comptroller's office thought, well, that's a pretty cool idea. Let's have consolidation of IT services. So they went and they interviewed the town of Caroline, Village of Groton, and they came and interviewed our staff. And basically, the question was, don't you think you could save the town's money if you offered IT services to them? And not any concern about whether the county would be reimbursed in any way. Greg Potter's short answer, was that, well, we really don't have the staff even to take care of our own IT needs fully, and you know, we really couldn't do that without the towns participating financially. So it was actually a rather strange. It's not really an audit. It was a rather strange episode, and not very helpful in any way, I think. And at any rate, in terms of IT services, in terms of responding to full requests and archiving, I do think we're making headway in that, and I think that we, I'm sure, have a long way to go, and I'm sure we have a lot more that we need to do in terms of really carrying out the ideas that were brought forward at the retreat last year.
Dewey, I try to answer the question, I think, more directly, and I've heard these issues that you're raising. I think the problem we have in Tompkins County is we don't have a uniformity on the legislature of how we receive our emails, mm-hmm. How we record them, how we delete them, and how they're recoverable. Many of us do our work at home because we don't have offices here that are equipped with computers or other things that we can work with. So we work at home, often with our own computers at our own expense, on our own internet service, that we have to pay the monthly charges for. And while I'm not complaining about that, I just think it's a symptom of what we're beginning to hear at the state level is a problem of, as you mentioned, FOIL, of people being able to know what messages are being sent by their elected officials to each other or to staff or to members of the public or various contractors that we deal with. How do we address that? I'm not sure, but we've got to come up with some kind of uniformity. Maybe it's everyone's going to have a county laptop, and that's where they're going to have to do their work. Maybe it's going to have to be, it's beyond me. I'm not a techie, but I know it works different, because every time I go home at night and turn on my computer and work, sometimes I'm there after midnight too, writing emails. Every keystroke I write that has to do with the county ought to be public, ought to be available to the public. Every keystroke I receive ought to be available to the public, because that's what we do under the open meetings law. But it gets lost. I get messages on my computer that say you're overfilled. It's time to delete some. So what gets deleted? Is it stuff that I shouldn't delete? Or stuff that I should delete? Some of it comes through the GroupWise system. Some of it comes directly to me, and I understand the problem, and I think we need to consider what we can do about uniformity.
Okay, Julie. Are there any other questions from any of the legislator? Okay. The nominations have been closed. There are no other candidates, Michael Lane and Martha Robertson. Shall we proceed to a vote? This is for chair of the county legislature. Okay. We'll do it in order of nomination. All those in favor, signify by raising your hand, please. All those in favor of Michael Lane for chair of the legislature, please raise your hand.
Aye.
One, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six. Okay. All those in favor of Martha Robertson for chair of the legislature, please signify by raising your hand.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
The vote is 6 for Michael Lane, 9 for Martha Robertson. Congratulations, Martha and Michael. Thank you for submitting for consideration.
Thank you very much.
Now may I adjourn the meeting?
Election. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. I look forward to working even harder with everybody.
Okay.
And to having a new chair,
and a new chair
to sit on.
Although we have to all look at the three chairs in the other room.
Put it in the front. Want me to do it? Okay. I have the duty to put this in the front, but I'll do it from this side. Come on.
I hope you like this stuff.
All right, the next order of business is to elect a vice chair of the Tompkins County Legislature. Are there any nominations? Thank you, Frank. Yes. Carol.
This wasn't planned, and I don't have a big speech, but I would hope that Mike would be willing to serve as our vice chair this year. I know we've asked you before. I think you bring a lot to the table, and I hope that you'll consider doing that. I think for all of the reasons that that other people have eloquently spoken about your strengths, I can say that I personally served with you on the Government Operations Committee, where I really felt like you, Mike, really bent over backwards to encourage people to bring all of our ideas to the table. And came up with an idea. Mike turned to you and said, "Would you like to chair a subcommittee?" So forgive me if I've stolen somebody's prepared speech, but I would really urge you to consider running.
Well,
and accepting that nomination.
So is that a nomination?
That's a nomination, yes.
So Carol nominates Mike for vice chair. Is there a second? Second by Pam. Okay. Are there any other nominations? Mike?
Can I say something?
Please do.
When I came into this, I hadn't thought about doing the vice chair. I've declined it for the last 3 years when people have asked me whether that's something I wanted to do. But I mean what I said about teamwork, and I think I have to apply it to myself. If this group wants me to do it, I will do it.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much, Mike. All right. So are there any other nominations?
Well, after that speech, I was going to nominate Dave, but after that speech, I think I'm not going to anymore.
Sorry, Dave.
You're the morning buddy, so, you know.
I hope that's okay with Dave.
Yes,
all right.
To know that.
Are there any other nominations? Is there a motion to close nominations? Moved by Will, seconded by Pat. Then I think we have one person nominated for vice chair. Mike, would you like to say anything else about?
No, I will just work for all the things I said. And I'll try to work hard with Martha as well. And I would certainly congratulate Martha on her election as chair.
Thank you so much, Mike. I would just like to say that I greatly appreciate your willingness to serve, and I'm very glad that the nomination's been made, and I think it's going to be an easy vote. So all those in favor of Mike Lane? I thought we did.
No,
we didn't.
We didn't vote
on that. All right. All in favor of closing nominations, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you. Then all in favor of Mike Lane as vice chair for the 2013 Tompkins County Legislature, please raise your hand.
Aye.
That's unanimous. Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, thank you all very much.
Congratulations. Great. Terrific. All right, then let us go to proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. And I have a proclamation. And Carol Fisher has been waiting very nicely in the back. Thanks for coming up, Carol. Whereas radon is a colorless, odorless, naturally occurring radioactive gas that threatens the health of our citizens, and whereas radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer deaths in the United States, the number one cause among non-smokers, and whereas 1 in 15 homes across the United States has an elevated radon level, and whereas any home in Tompkins County may have an elevated level of radon, even if other homes in the same neighborhood do not, and whereas testing for radon is simple and inexpensive, and whereas identified radon problems can be fixed, and whereas Cornell Cooperative Extension of Tompkins County, the New York State and Tompkins County Department of Health, and the United States Environmental Protection Agency are supporting efforts to encourage Americans to test their homes for radon, mitigate elevated levels of radon, and build new homes with radon-resistant materials and features. Now, therefore, I, Martha Robertson, Chair of the Tompkins County Legislature, do hereby proclaim January 2013 as official Radon Action Month in Tompkins County. So thank you. Would you like to make a few remarks?
Thank you, Martha, for the proclamation. And for
use the microphone.
Thank you for the proclamation and for recognizing this very important health issue. Certainly none of us needs lung cancer as a result of radon in our lives. And I would like to take this opportunity to invite everyone in the room and everybody watching on the broadcast to our annual Radon Action event at Cooperative Extension on January 17th from 3 to 5 p.m. After a short presentation, we'll be distributing free radon test kits, and we will be doing that until they run out. So those of you who've never tested your homes yet or haven't tested them in a number of years, you don't have any more excuses. So I hope to see you there, and thank you again.
Thanks so much, Carol. Appreciate that. If I might just add that gas from Marcellus shale formations is especially high in radon, and that's something that people are very concerned about when the gas is used in New York City kitchens. So just a
small point, research that's coming out right now.
Martha, can I ask Carol to just repeat that date and time again, please?
Good idea.
Slowly.
The date is Thursday, January 17th, from 3 to 5 p.m. at Cornell Cooperative Extension, 615 Willow Avenue in Ithaca.
And you have a test kit right there.
I do.
That's
right. This is what we will be giving out, these free radon test kits, very, very simple to use. And we're fortunate to be able to distribute them at no charge. So hope to see everyone there.
Thank you, Carol. Carol.
Can I, if I might ask a question. So I agree with Martha that this is a serious concern for people in New York City. I actually, on January 17th, have been asked to speak at an event on a panel in New York by people who are concerned about gas drilling. I'm not sure if I'm going to make it. As a matter of fact, if anybody here would like to come and be a real person from the Marcellus Shale residential area, that's what they're looking for. But, you know, they had concerns to start with about other aspects of their watershed, but they now are developing more serious concerns about radon. And I'm just wondering if you're in touch with your counterparts in the city and downstate in general, and whether this is something that's being done around the state on that day, or it's just a local thing.
It's just local on that day. This is National Radon Action Month, so all through the month of January there will be events and various outreach events going on throughout the state, throughout the country. Because the winter time is a good time to test for radon. January is a good time, so that's why they've made it National Radon Action Month. And the issues surrounding radon in the water and issues surrounding radon in the natural gas are things that are certainly being looked at right now.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol. Public privilege of the floor. One person signed up. And if anybody else wants to speak, Laurie Kowinski. Kowinski. Tell us your name, please, where you live.
Yes. Good evening. My name is Laurie Kowinski. I live in the city of Ithaca. I am a staff member of Catholic Charities of Tompkins County, and I'm here representing the Labor Religion Coalition of the Finger Lakes. A couple of us are here tonight to speak to you about, to sort of join our voices with other folks who have spoken about the workers at our recycling center. Some time back, some of them came and spoke along with members of the Tompkins County Worker Center, and we also want to stand in support of them. These are workers who are under contract with a company called ReCommunity, our county's contract with that company, and they only receive $9 an hour. So some of those workers stood up and said, if we're working for a county entity and the county is a living wage employer, why aren't we making the living wage? So we say, good for them, and we are standing behind them in that effort. We just want to make that known. As people of faith from different congregations in this area and people from various labor unions in this area, we work for workers' rights in coalition with the Worker Center, and we feel that these workers especially deserve your attention. We want to especially thank Mr. Dennis for speaking with one of the Worker Center members about this and looking into it for us, and Barbara Ekstrom from Solid Waste Division, who have met with the workers directly and I know is trying to figure out what can be done for them. But we just come to stand with those workers and to challenge this body to think about what that means for us to be a living wage employer, but to have people working, doing the county's work, but not receiving a living wage. In the counties on Long Island, Suffolk and Nassau County, as well as in New York City, their living wage ordinances cover contracted workers. So our challenge to you is to consider that in this coming year, that those who are working for contracts for this county also receive at least that bare minimum that we know is not only better for those workers, but ultimately better for all of those multiplier effects that help our local economy. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Laurie. Would anyone else like to address the legislature? Thank you. Legislator privilege. Anyone? Kathy Luce.
Thank you.
Well, let me first, I just want to say thank you. Welcome. It's great to have you back.
Thank you. I appreciate the warm welcome, and I want to say how happy I am to be back and how much I missed y'all. I did follow you on TV. It's very interesting because there's a lot to be gained from being able to stop and rewind and there's also a lot to be gained from being able to fast forward, I'll say. But I did really get a sense of, once again, and it's nice to have that way of being removed of, I got a sense of the passion and the commitment that everybody has here for not just their constituents, but for everybody in the county. And that really comes through. And another thing that came through to me as I was keeping up, not just with the TV, but also on the agenda, is the way that throughout the years, people manage to respond to the requests that are made and try and move the county in a direction that corresponds with what we say our stated values are. And that's something that I think is pretty consistent across the board with legislators, that as you perceive a county value, you really try to move the county in a direction that makes it consistent with that. And that was really clear to me, especially when I started looking at some of the other counties and state and federal government deliberations that go on. We stand up pretty well. Despite my criticisms, which are many, it's part of because I want things to improve. And I have to say, getting the distance that I did really helped me to appreciate a little more what we've got and the body that we have, the talent that we have. And it also made me realize that even when you're not coming to work, you can put in a whole lot of hours in this job, and that the amount of time and dedication that it requires doesn't really stop just because we're not here on the floor or not at meetings. And I really want to say to my colleagues how much I appreciate your dedication, especially in a time when elected officials are pretty much getting smeared all over the place. At local level, dedication to public service is something that hasn't gone away in Tompkins County, and it's something that we can be proud of. Just a couple of comments. Yay for Latino votes. My gosh. I know, I've been gone a long time. I could make a list of 50 things, and all of them I wanted to, like, you know, I was hollering back at the TV and going, yay. But that an awesome election for more representation for women, both at the national and at the state levels. Just a terrific groundswell of growth in terms of people in the public recognizing that we are all part of the solution, that it's not a matter of you elect your official and then you say, bye-bye, see you at election time. That no, it's a matter of everybody has to get together and try and support elected officials and also people in public life, whether they're administrative officials or whatever, to be able to help move government in the direction that we want it to go. I don't know if that's something that everybody can stay in touch with all the time, but I got a renewed appreciation of it. There's a whole lot more, but I'm going to let it go just to say I'm really glad to be back. I appreciate everybody that got in touch with me by card, which all y'all did, and emails and letters and personal phone call. And I know Carol will agree with me how important it is to have that contact, especially when it's something that you're longing to reengage with. So just as a last for anybody in the public that wonders, I had surgery for my thumb, and I've got a pin in it right now, and it should be removed in a couple of weeks, and theoretically I should be able to go back to my Cornell job at some point. In the meantime, I'm doing my best to recover, so if you see me making strange motions, I'm not gesturing to the chair. I'm just doing my little exercises. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Kathy Lucen. It is great to have you back. Tom Lavigne has an arm surgery thing, and he has to sit here like this, so he constantly looks like he wants to talk, so at least you don't have to do that. Anyone else? Pat?
I just want to say congratulations to both of our successful candidates tonight for leadership positions in the legislature. I think that we have a very, very strong leadership team. I'm very happy that you changed your mind, Mike. I know when I spoke to you about this a couple of weeks ago, tried to encourage you to run for vice chair. At that point, you were committed to running for chair and were not willing to consider vice chair. And I really am pleased to think that we're going to have both of you in leadership, and I look forward to working with you this year. So congratulations.
I've got Leslyn. Did you have your hand up, Carol? And Carol, then Pam. Leslyn, Carol, and Pam.
Okay. I, too, want to express my congratulations to both of you and Mike. I especially want to say how much I appreciate your humility in what you had to say
just in terms of being a team player and saying you will live by your own convictions and what you're asking all of us to do, that you were saying I will do the same and serve this body with the same conviction and the same dedication that I would have brought to the chair position. And so I really appreciate hearing that from you. Thank you for your service over the years and for always being willing to put yourself out there to leave this body. I've served with you through, I don't know, three chairs at this point, and you've always been willing to say, you know, we can have change, and I'm willing to sort of be there as well. So thank you for that. I want to say to both of you that you both know that the issue of diversity and inclusion is very important to me, and I like to speak more of inclusion than I speak of diversity. And as I listen to you, one of the things that I want to make very, very clear is diversity is more than just who's represented in our workforce and in our hiring. Lori was here talking about our living wage issue. That's an issue of inclusion that's important to this county. It's an issue that I brought to Joe and Barbara's attention because the workers working for REIT Committee, I know very well, came to me. And so we started to make a move on that. And so I was pleased to hear that Barbara met with them because that is what she said she would do. The issue of inclusion is looking at everything we do and making sure that it's not a second thought when we think of who are we reaching out to, that it's not, it's just part of how we do business, that, you know, it's like, oh, wait a minute, we're missing such and such. It's not a second thought. It is part of the fabric of how we do business. The issue of inclusion is making sure that everybody who works for this organization feel like they are valued and they add value to this organization. The issue of diversity and inclusion is making sure that we celebrate the very things that make us different and the things that make us the same. Those are the bigger picture issues when it comes to diversity and inclusion. When we talk about our contracts and making sure that the people who get contracts from us and looking to hire local workers and putting them to work, because we know that people in our county need jobs too. That's an issue of inclusion, and that people are being treated fairly. That's an issue of inclusion and diversity. And so I ask you to think of it in a much broader scale as you think of how you can exercise leadership around that issue. We have our Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee that's working very hard. One of the things that we're looking at right now is our own policy. Where are we? We have a wonderful diversity statement, but how is it being sort of followed? How is it being carried out? How is it being honored, aside from just hanging in buildings? To really think of what are we doing as a county to say to people, how are you using that statement to carry out the business of the county? How are you using it to work with each other? Because it says it all. We, in our committee, we're also working on just looking at the contracts and the RFPs and the things we send out and say, what are we asking of those folks when they apply to us, when they send in, they respond to RFPs? Where in there are we asking about their commitment, understanding, and commitment to diversity and inclusion? If it is something that we hold near and dear to our job description as a county, then how are we holding others who we do business with to that? What are we hearing from them? And again, it's not a matter of, well, I have 8 black people working for me or I have 3 Latino women. That's not the issue. You may not have any, but how are all the other workers who are working with you feeling? Okay. Are they feeling that this is a place that I want to get up and come to work to because I know that my opinion matters, that I know that my perspective is important, that I know that it's an opportunity for growth and improvement for me? That's inclusion. And so I want to appeal to you as our newly elected leadership and to all of us around the table and to those listening to think of it from that global perspective for us as a county. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Carol.
Would you come back to me?
Okay. Pam?
Yes. Thank you, Leslie. That was really very eloquently stated. And I guess I wanted to thank Catholic Charities for coming and for the Worker Center for the work that they have done in bringing this issue to our to the forefront for us to think about and act on. And one of the things that I think from what Leslin was just talking about is that employees need to feel valued. And there are lots of different ways that employees can feel valued. But the clearest indication of whether they are valued or not is what they get paid. And if we have a system, and I know we are all trying very hard to stretch our dollar, the county dollar, the tax dollar, to get the greatest value that we can. But if we end up hiring at lower wages, with no benefits or whatever, at substandard levels, people who, instead of paying them what we would pay our own people, I think that we are just fooling ourselves, and that that wonderful saying that we have, it would ring fairly hollow. So I think that we need to work harder. I think we need to become clearer in our policies about whether what people who, if we are going to subcontract work out, that the people who are working into that subcontracted situation have got to be paid in a way that is within the values of what we think are important as a county, and that has just got to be the cost of doing business, and we need to make clear to the people who are applying for these positions, and not the positions, but the contracts, that this is something that the county it's important to those of us who live in Tompkins County.
Thank you, Pam. Ready, Carol?
Yeah.
Okay.
I wasn't coming with a grand annual or lifetime goal, so I thought I'd let that go first, although I do share the sentiment that we need to look carefully at our policies about privatization of work and what that means for the work that we are having done. I really wanted to talk about asking people to look for brine trucks. I'm getting reports, a lot of calls from various parts of the county that people are seeing big trucks on the road labeled liquid brine. As we all know that there is some concern about the use of liquid chloride. It's a salt. There are advantages to using that on the road, but we do want to make sure that, at least I'd like to make sure that the source of that brine is not hydrofracked wells or in any way brine that would be laced with heavy chemicals or potentially radon and radioactive materials. And I think I would have brought this up under the highway report, under F&I, but I think that this crosses the interests of our committees. I think the health committee, Frank, has some concern about what gets ultimately comes into the public's drinking water. I think PDEC, Will, has interest in what comes into our lakes and streams. And so I just think want us to be careful to follow this. And so far, the trucks that have been seen that were reported to me were trucks on, they were state trucks, it turned out, as we tracked them down, on Route 13 out in Newfield, Route 79 headed west towards Mecklenburg, and on Trumbull's Quarters Road, and as far as we can figure out, that's a county road, but that is not a county highway truck. As far as we can figure out, there may have been a state truck cutting across. We are trying to track the source of that brine. But we heard reports last year from, I think, Lansing. I guess I'd like to ask all of you to be out there watching and maybe asking your constituents, whatever way you communicate with them, to be looking and to ask them if they see such a truck. It really is helpful to take a little picture of what the markings look like, maybe of the license plates, just so that we can be more accurate in tracking down the source of this material. That will help rather than the vague reports that we're getting. So if you'll help me with that, that would be great. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol.
Instagram. You could get it up on Facebook. You could get them before they got out of the county. It'd be great.
I'm with you, Mike, whatever that is. I'm not on that with you. Dooley and did I see Will? Okay, Dooley.
Thank you. I have similar concerns about livable wages for people in the domestic worker segment of our workforce and farm workers. New York State law does not treat them equally, and with a new session of the legislature coming into being, we have an opportunity to lobby the state legislature to extend that concept to those classes of workers. So I realize that we should be focusing on county business, but I think this is a part of county business too. We say that we are a living wage employer. I know that when we did the bid seeking for our recycling and solid waste center upgrade, we indicated interest in having that as one of the factors that we would use to rate the respondents. But we didn't make it dispositive. We didn't say, if you don't do this, we won't give you the contract. And so we could treat those RFPs differently, but once we have a contract, it's very hard to change it. And I wish it were possible to do something quicker. But I think we can extend our reach to try to help farm workers and domestic workers statewide. And so I hope that we can address that in a resolution or sense of the body sooner rather than later. And in a similar note, when the federal Congress reorganizes the House and the Senate, they get to set their rules for the new terms, and the filibuster has been misused in recent years terribly, in my opinion. You no longer have to get up and actually filibuster. You just sort of let it be known that this should be filibustered, and somehow it's never brought up for a vote, or it requires 60 votes to pass something, and that's not what the Senate rules say. And it's my understanding that New York State's senators are not fully on board with restoring the filibuster to what it historically was intended to be. And it's important to get a message to them sooner rather than later. It would be great if we could, if there were a sense of this body tonight that would authorize our newly elected leadership team to communicate our sentiments on that regard. And I don't know how to do that, because we don't usually do things like this. We bring resolutions and they go to committees. But this is something which needs to be done sooner rather than later. And so I'm turning to you to see if during the course of this meeting we might figure out a way to do that.
My short answer would be if a letter were drafted and we could get circulated for people's signature, I'd be happy to sign it and then, you know, follow up with a phone call and that sort of thing. If it, you know, that's available to us more quickly than a resolution, which obviously takes another 2 weeks.
No, I was thinking of a motion tonight that was a sense of the body, but that a letter makes sense. Sure.
At the end under new business, unfinished business. Unfinished business. I don't see why, Jonathan, we can just have a motion for an action. Am I right?
Or you can think about it.
Yeah, let me think about that. I guess the motion would be what? Because to write a letter?
To write a letter or to ask me to make a phone call or something. And so that it's not just my...
Yeah, I think that is part of new business. If you're doing a resolution, and I think it has to follow the procedure to have a resolution and the appropriate 10 votes. I think if somebody's just making a motion for, say, the chair to contact whoever that might be, and the federal legislation are representatives about something, I think that's okay.
What was the beginning of this? What's okay?
Do you have a motion? I mean, if what is being asked is not a resolution here, but a motion asking the chair to write a letter to our federal representatives, mm-hmm. I think that's okay to do that.
Okay, and that would take place when?
New business.
Okay. All right. So somebody think about it and scratch something down. I've got Will, then Pat, then Frank.
Thank you, Martha, and thank you, Julie, for raising that. I spent a very frustrating half hour of my life today trying to reach the office of Senator Schumer, getting put on endless hold or whatever, and ultimately, after about 25 minutes, getting dropped. So I sent him an email, and it disappeared into cyberspace. I just want to thank the Catholic Charity Center, Laurie, for coming in and reminding us. I hope there is something we can do, and I'm sure finding out what the time frame for the contracts are. But as Julie points out, once we're locked in, it's pretty hard to change. 3 weeks ago, we met shortly after the unbelievably tragic events in Newtown, Connecticut, and I said that I really felt compelled for us to try to come up with some specific things that we wanted our state and federal legislators to do. And I've been giving this a lot of thought. I've been starting to compile a list, and you've probably seen all the articles and whatever. You know, there are many ideas out there. What I'm going to do before the next meeting is I will send out an email listing the ones that have come to my attention, and I would really appreciate if you give a quick look and see if you would be supportive of including these in some kind of resolution. I've also become aware that in New York State it is possible for counties to have their own gun laws, and whether this is something we would want to entertain, probably we would want to do a very serious look into it, but I hope that public safety will consider this possibility, see if there's anything else we can do. And once again, I would very much welcome if anybody has any suggested model resolutions or whereases or whatever, or would like to sit and meet with me and talk about this, I would very much like to get something in motion soon. We've let this go on far, far too long. I think the reality of gun violence has been a daily occurrence, and the tragic loss is there. This is the equivalent of a Newtown massacre in our cities every 2 days. And that's been largely invisible, and maybe it took a wake-up call like this to bring it into our attention. But I'm hoping we will use this to positive advantage. And that's what I wanted to say. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you very much, Will. Pat, and then Frank.
I wanted to go back to the question of living wage for our contractors and subcontractors, though, and share just some information that came to me through my experience on Common Council in the city of Ithaca. While I was on council, we were asked basically the same thing. Would we enact something that would require that contractors or subcontractors doing business with the city pay a living wage to anyone that they employed? And we did a lot of research on that issue at the time. And it's very possible that the situation has changed since then. So I'm not trying to say this with the authority that this is currently true, but I think it is something that should be carefully researched as we move ahead to see if there's some way that we can assure that everyone who works in any way for the county gets a living wage. And that is that at that time, what we found was that there were many contractors who would, in effect, not bid on city contracts, if we included that requirement. And by reducing the number of contractors that would bid on the jobs in the city, we were limiting our options in terms of who we would be able to hire to do the work, and in some cases that might be detrimental to whatever the project was itself. In order to work with a contractor who would accept that requirement, it would in some cases cost more to the city to be able to do that. So it's a little bit of a thorny issue in that sense, and I would be very interested. We didn't pass that at the time, but I believe that since then the city has passed that kind of a regulation, if I'm correct. And I think it would be very interesting to talk to people in the city and find out if they have in fact run into the kind of problems that we were told that we could anticipate if we enacted that kind of a requirement. And I certainly would like to find a way for us to be able to do this. I just think that if we do go into this, we need to make sure that we have all the information that's available before we go into it and make any kind of a decision with our eyes open.
Thank you, Pat. Frank.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Congratulations. And Mike, congratulations also. I want to second what Pat is saying about the living wage issue. I think we ought to move a little bit slowly before we consider passing legislation. I think it's important that we do some research, or maybe extensive research, on what the effect might be, and not only on the county coffers, but as far as what the impact might be on our county residents regarding taxes. I think basically we need more information. Originally, I wanted to react to what Dooley was asking, and I think it had to do, if I heard you correctly, can you hear me? I'm having trouble hearing some of you speak tonight, so I'm wondering if the volume on these mics isn't up. But if I heard Dooley correctly, the concern that she was expressing was the item at the federal level regarding filibusters. George Will had an interesting column a couple of days back on that very topic. Before we weighed in on, I dare say, I don't know how many of us around this table have much of a background on the current regulation, how you introduce something, what you can filibuster, what the rules are at the federal level, and what the impact might be. And I would advise before, with all due respect, Madam Chair, before we suggest that Martha get a hold of anybody at the state level, we do some research to find out exactly what this, what are we talking about? I know that from time to time we weigh in on international issues, on national issues, and certainly on local issues. And I'd like to have some more information on this particular one before we take a position on it. We don't need a lecture tonight, but I would like some more information before we ask Martha to contact anybody at the state level. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Frank. Peter.
I'd like to second what Frank said. It's a very complicated situation, not only the filibuster. There's all kinds of rules in both chambers of the federal government and in the state government that discriminate strongly against a minority party, as the Democrats are in the House of Representatives. But it's the same rule no matter who's the majority party. And just to be against filibuster, it's not at all clear, you know, what is it you're for? It's a complicated thing, and it's gone through a lot of changes over the past 25 or 30 years.
And we would never have been treated to Jefferson Smith's diatribe in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Absolutely.
Right?
Will, then Leslie.
Well, that's the problem, Frank, is that we are not being treated to that kind of... That used to be what a filibuster was. You had to go stand on the floor, speak, basically until you ran out of energy, and it served a purpose of basically empowering minorities and slowing down the process, but it also had limits, so just the physical stamina of the people to speak. Now we have a situation where literally one can file an intent to filibuster in secret, and it just stops in action. And it's what they used to call, you know, tyranny of the minority. And all due respect to Frank, while I don't pretend that any of us fully understand it, if we want to weigh in, the window of opportunity is very tiny. Literally, it might have been just today, but my understanding from that Mr. Reed has given, I guess, this later in January, maybe the 17th or whatever, that rules can only be changed essentially at the beginning of the session. And so within the next week or so, that will be finalized. Whether or not we collectively want to make an expression, I guess we can tell by if there's a vote, or we can certainly, as individuals, pursue this. But it'll be a moot point after a few weeks.
Thank you, Will. It's complicated. Leslie and then Carol.
I just want to ask folks to add to their calendars the month of January. We celebrate the birthday of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. It's always the 21st here in Ithaca, or whatever that day is. I think it's the 21st this year. It's a day on celebration. But the Saturday before the Monday holiday is the annual Greater Ithaca Activity Center GA, our community breakfast, celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. So please mark your calendars for January 19th, 9 to 11:30 at the Beverly J. Martin Elementary School gym, the annual breakfast for GIAC. And as always, if you feel like putting in some volunteer time, we welcome volunteers. Just give a call to GIAC 272-3622. So just wanted to make that announcement. I also should announce that on the 17th, Thursday the 17th, I think it's 11 to 1 at the Southside Community Center, is the annual Northside Southside Martin Luther King Jr. luncheon. I think they do it every other year. So there's a luncheon in honor of Dr. King that happens at the Southside Community Center. It's the Northside Southside program of Lifelong that hosts that event. So just wanted to share.
Thank you, Leslie. Carol, then Brian.
Yeah, I just want to follow on what Will said. I would encourage the chair of our legislature, newly reelected chair of our legislature, to pursue this. And if it's not in the name of everybody in the legislature, you certainly can add my name. In addition to the kinds of things Will was talking about, my understanding is that you used to have a quorum on the floor of the Senate in order to filibuster, that you had to have colleagues willing to support you in that effort. And today you don't need that. You can just come and you just, you know, if the camera were showing everything except the, in addition to the podium, there'd be an empty room. And, it's not what we're paying our elected officials to do. And I just, you know, I remember vividly the era, a lot of us, as I was growing up, where there were differences of opinion over many issues, some along party lines, but people were willing to talk to each other. There was a level of civility. There was a willingness to get the work done. And it's just things have slowed down. This effort to reform the filibuster is an effort to bring back a measure of that civility and willingness to move things forward. And I think it's time to try something. And I'm embarrassed that our congressional representative is one of the people who isn't willing to join the group of people wanting to do that. So I would hope that we encourage, try something. If it doesn't work, we'll try something else.
Thanks, Cal. Brian?
Thanks. And I, too, want to say that I congratulate you both, and you're both very capable folks. leaders. I'm actually sitting here remembering parts of each of your speeches, if you will, having to do, and especially with you, Mike, having to do with streamlining, basically staying on task, doing the things that we need to do. And Kathy?
Yes.
You actually brought up a good thing, and it was because you had to do it, but you sat home and had to actually watch these meetings. And I got to tell you, I'm sitting here right now. We've gone through privilege of the floor for almost an hour. We've talked about things that should be in committee, most things. Now we're talking about rules in the U.S. Senate, and we have not done 1 ounce of county work yet.
Oh, we elected a chair.
Well, okay, we did that. Just saying. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. With that, if there's nothing else, I move on to my report. Okay, thank you. First, I have an appointment to the Workforce Investment Board, Jack Lance. That's in your packet. Joe and I had the opportunity to meet today with Assemblywoman Barbara Lifton, and it was confirmed just this morning, and I sent a message out to you all. The communication slowed way down with the holidays, and then I realized suddenly that she's probably off to Albany as of next week. So we set the meeting up, and I sent you all a note, knowing it was, and apologizing for how late the notice was. I'm sure Barbara would be happy to speak with anybody, since she's right here. Our senators are not in the local community as much, but I know she'd be happy to meet with anybody at any time. But I just wanted to let you know we did meet with her. It was basically the agenda that we took to Senator O'Mara and Senator Seward last month. I wanted to report on a meeting that we had with a number of city and as well as county elected officials and staff and members of the public about the issue of wood stoves in mostly in the city. Actually, we focused on the city issues with wood stoves. That was December 10th. There were some ideas proposed. It was a little frustrating to realize that our choices are limited. I've got notes from that meeting that I've sent to the participants, and I'm waiting for comments back from people to see if we've got the notes correct. The upshot, one of the things to do that the city would do a survey of homes of residents to see how many people have stoves in fireplaces, how many people are bothered by smoke and in their homes or outside of their homes. Peter and I worked on that survey, and I'll be sending that around also to the participants at the meeting to hand that off to the city. So if anybody's interested, didn't already get those notes, I haven't sent out the survey yet, but if anybody else wants the notes from that meeting, just let me know. I'm happy to send them. We didn't set up another meeting. The idea pretty much was to explore some options. People did take assignments, and that's part of the notes. Pat?
Could you just say one more time who the survey is going to?
Well, Peter and I sort of scratched our heads a little bit. Was this a city survey or a county survey? My memory was that the city would do the survey of city residents. And we volunteered to write it, which we did, drafted it.
Is it going to all city residents then?
Well, it would be up to the city. I mean, we just drafted it. I haven't sent it out to people yet. This is like just an offer to hear city, would you, if you'd like to use it. And the mayor was at the meeting, and he mentioned doing such a survey because so that they have a better handle on what the scope of the problem is. Do we have you know, thousands of people who are disturbed by wood smoke, or do we have many more people who would, you know, really want to keep their stoves, et cetera?
The reason I ask is if this is the kind of issue that could conceivably end up in some kind of legislation, either with the city or with the county, I would be concerned about making sure that whatever survey is done in a very professional kind of manner, so that the we could be assured that whatever results come out of it represent the kind of effort that professionals know how to do with a survey. And I know that that made a big difference, for instance, in the broadband committee, that we were able to commission a survey to be done. And I'm just a little bit leery of something, because one of the things we know about a survey is that if it's done in this, some kind of an informal way, the people who tend to feel strongly one way or the other are the ones who will tend to respond. So it's not necessarily, the results aren't necessarily unbiased.
Peter and I volunteered to take a stab at the first draft of the questions and then hand it to the city. And it really, you know, the mayor actually, sort of in concluding the meeting, I would say, he said that, well, we really need, there are a couple of actions that the city could take, legislative actions. For example, no burn days depending upon weather inversions, or banning stoves altogether, or establishing a nuisance ordinance system like a noise ordinance system. He said before we would do any of those options, he would like to see a survey that really gets a better handle on the scope of the problem. So that's the context of this. And I know I did not offer that the county would do this. We were there because the health department is involved. But basically, my position, and I know, you know, Pam was there, Frank couldn't make it, but Will was there, Peter was there, Frank Krupa and Liz Cameron were there. Who else was there from the county?
Well, my question.
So the point is, it's primarily a city problem, and mm-hmm. I think they will. The idea was that we were there because of the health department, but I think the mayor kind of accepted that they have to do something about it. Let me go to Leslyn and then Carol.
I think you just answered my question. I was trying to find out who from the county was there, and did you say Pam? Pam, you were there? Okay.
Yeah. Carol?
Yeah, I realize we can't solve the problem by ourselves, but as this moves forward, I would hope that we're not going to just leave the city out there on their own. I do think that the quality of the air that we breathe is a county responsibility. I also noticed that the EPA has announced new air standards that will be coming out in the next, year and a half or so. And for us, I hope we wouldn't be the kind of county that says, you know, we're going to wait until after the new standards come out and then see, you know, if we can be dragged kicking and screaming to meeting new air standards. So I realize we have to work with the city on this. I hope that we're going to do that and not have this one meeting be the end of it.
Yeah, let me just be clear. I'm reporting on this at HHS next week. Frank asked me to come to the meeting. That's one of the, it's probably the main discussion point for this at the county. So I'm just kind of giving you a quick summary. This is not time to do committee work about it. Kathy Luce and Peter.
Thank you. As you all know, I was one of the people that brought this up. I live in Fall Creek, where one of the people that one of the families that have been having trouble with this have repeatedly reached out for assistance through their education and the education of people like Pam and other people that are suffering, not just in the city but in the county. I've come to understand that this is a public health issue. We might not recognize it as such right now, but rather than being reactive, I think it would be really smart to do something along the lines of what Carol is suggesting, and that is encompass the fact that breathing air is an essential right, and that as government, one of the things we get to safeguard is the public health by making sure that people do get clean air. How that's measured and how it's enacted, it may sound funny to people, but look, at all the energy and time that we've put into fracking, water is essential. But guess what? You die first if you don't get And that's air. He got to breathe. So it's not just, and this is a way that the people that have complained have been marginalized, it's not just a problem for a few. The fact is, and the EPA was right in coming out with new regulations, people that live in homes where wood heat and other forms of combustion other than the fossil fuels that we all hate so much are used, oftentimes people with compromised immune systems or children end up having respiratory problems, maybe not right then, but later. This isn't just due to faulty stoves and bad ignition. This is particulate that's below the micron level, stuff that we can't see that's very difficult for us to measure, but that has an effect on people. So we might not recognize that there's a problem now, and I know that as environmentalists, every one of us wants to see to it that we find a way to avoid the use of fossil fuel, that we phase it out, that we get rid of it. And yet we need to be realistic about the fact that sometimes what we're espousing for the city and for a densely populated, relatively speaking, in a rural area, a densely populated county, which is what we're moving toward, we need to recognize that burning wood is not necessarily the best thing for us to do. I know from the little survey that I tried to do, and Pam, I totally agree with you. People respond very vehemently to a survey that needs to be scientifically constructed. I got dozens of responses from people in Fall Creek alone who offered, because of their expertise in writing surveys, to help write surveys. But believe me, I learned from not just the academics in town, but a bunch of others, that you better have a survey that's professionally written. I would love to see one that is not only professionally written, but it also is supported by all the educational programs and support that we have to bear. I particularly appreciate that a notice was sent out recently, although I felt that it was not unbiased. I felt that it was biased toward, as my friends who suffer refer to, burners. It was biased toward burners. Listen, I know a lot of people in Fall Creek that burn wood, and they do it, and they're being sustainable. I can't leave my house without being able to smell the smell of smoke, which I like. However, if I get really close to it, it does make me sick. So I can only imagine what it does to people that have compromised immune system and trouble breathing. I'm so glad that Martha and others have taken this on. I'd like to be included in whatever efforts go forward. This is not going away. This is a public health problem. So let's do what Carol suggested, and let's not run away from this and be stubborn in resisting it. We should be active and proactive and go toward trying to figure out how to protect our citizens. Can you tell I feel strongly about this? Peter?
Yeah, I think that we're talking too much about what was really a very small effort. A group of people got together to talk about the persistent complaints that we have heard from a limited number of people. We sat there and talked about it, and someone said, well, how about we find out how many people complaining about this, and what about find out how many people actually burn wood stoves? And somebody else said, yeah, we ought to do a survey. Anybody interested? And I stuck up my hand, and Martha stuck up her hand, and we volunteered to do something that the city might use or might not use. So that's all we're really talking about. And Martha and I spent maybe, I don't know, 20 minutes, 25 minutes writing a little survey and gave it to Savati, and he may use it or he may do a lot of other things. But I think we've done our part of the job that we talked about. Right, Martha?
This is totally a first draft. So, and totally, you know, the city might take that to a professional. I have no idea what they're going to do. I will send out the notes from that meeting to everybody with a caution that I sent out the notes, I think, Sunday, asking for feedback from other people who'd been at the meeting. You know, did I miss anything? Did I get it right? Haven't heard back from anybody. I will send the survey along to you. I actually have my monthly meeting with Savante tomorrow, so I will talk about this with him. But as far as our response, certainly it's committee work that I think HHS is the right place for it to be. You know, calling this one meeting and writing this first draft of a survey is in no way intended to be the end of it for Tompkins County. I'm just reporting on what's been done so far. I would talk about other letters that we might need to write. I think I talked last meeting about the comment period on the fracking regulations. The deadline is a week from tomorrow. Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
Okay. I've submitted some comments, and I've started collecting thoughts for a letter that might be circulated among all of you. If anybody else has written or is working on this, would appreciate people's suggestions. I know Liz Thomas, for example, has sent out from Town of Ulysses. She sent out a request for what other people are working on and also sent the draft that she's working on. So if we can pull something together, I'd like to do that and send it from as many individuals here as are willing to sign it. Wednesday, the 9th of January, is the State of the State. That's the day the governor gives his major address in Albany and sort of sets the agenda for the year. There are buses from here going to participate in a rally that will try to tell the governor what we think about one of the this decision that he probably is going to make in 2013. So if you're interested in going on that bus, let me know. I'll get you that information. So, and with all of that, somehow we also have to have our individual meetings so that we can talk about committees and committee structure and what assignments you'd like for this coming year. So I'll get together with Mike and find some blocks of time when the two of us can be together and then try to feed those dates to all of you and hope that we can get those meetings done in short order and perhaps, if we're lucky, be able to appoint committees by January 15th. Is the 15th, 17th? 15th, next meeting? By our next meeting. That's a tall agenda, but stay tuned for that list of dates and times. So I once again, thank you very much for your confidence, for your support, and for all your work that we've done over the last 3 years and the work we'll do together the next year. And Mike, again, congratulations and thank you very much for taking on the vice chair position. Appreciate it.
Can I just say one thing? I don't think we properly thank Nathan for his service for last year as vice chair.
Yes, that's true. Thank you, Nate. It was a pleasure to have you there. And I will say some of those meetings were over the phone, and you really sort of pushed other things aside and made sure that you could do it. So thank you.
Even when there was bad reception.
That's right. All right. County Administrator Joe Mariano.
Thanks, Martha. Let me congratulate you and Mike, too, on your election. I'm looking forward to working with you both. As you were talking about priorities, not only you but the entire legislature, I certainly scribbled some things down, and we do have an agenda for the coming year, and I think as Kathy Luce has said, we're accustomed to dealing with complex things, and when you look at what we can do much. We do accomplish things, so I look forward to working with both of you in the coming year to do that. Mike, I also had scribbled down in my notes to thank Nate for his engagement throughout a very busy year for him, and the reception was sometimes bad, and we worked through it. I hope the hospital is paying for your cell phone bill, not you or worse, the county. So I appreciate that. Last week I sent you a summary of the Road Patrol arbitration award that was made a few days before you received the memo. So I think you've seen the general terms of what was in that award. I thought tonight, just on the record, I should go through a couple of the major points of that so it's out there and clear. In terms of the years covered, an arbitration award can only cover 2 years. And because it's been a long time since we had a contract, these are two fairly distant years that we're talking about. So the period begins in March of 2008, and the period arbitrated ends in February of 2010. So it's that two-year period that goes some ways back. On the major issue of wage growth, the arbitrator awarded a 2.9% increase for both of those years. So for 08-09 and for 09-2010, that was the wage award across the board. So for all members of that union, at least all uniformed members of that union, a consistent across the board increase of 2.9%. There are adjustments to other elements of the wage package, things like shift differential and Frank's favorite, the longevities, were increased and compressed and accelerated. on-call allowances, clothing allowances, things like that, that they add up. But in terms of the overall wage package, a relatively small fraction of the overall wage impact falls into those areas. So again, that part of the process is now over and behind us. I will say, I guess the one thing that wasn't affected, and I did note it in the memo, there was not a change in the contribution levels by the employer or employees for health benefits, which was something that the union had asked for, so that remained as is. So again, for those two years, the arbitrator's award is binding. David Squires and his staff will be working to implement this over the next few weeks in terms of retroactive checks and adjustments of ongoing wages. We will then begin to figure out how to come back to the table to see if we can negotiate the years that are still outstanding. So with respect to the arbitrator's award, that's where we are. There are some issues in this bargaining unit that are not subject to binding arbitration. Believe it or not, there are, I think, four civilian employees of the Road Patrol Union who are not eligible for binding arbitration. So that small group of employees' schedule is not arbitrable, as the word is pronounced, I guess. Other things, small items like that, are not subject to arbitration. They have been submitted to a fact finder. The fact finder's report came back a couple of days ago for us to take a look at, and again, it covers the four civilians. A proposed process to look at the schedule of uniformed employees, and a process for what's called 207C, which is basically the disability program for sheriff's employees, uniformed employees. We are looking at that fact finder report. I'm obligated to get you a response to that, I believe, by the 9th of January. As I understand it, we can accept the report in full or in part or not at all. So, again, by the 9th, I will be reporting to you on those issues for those two back years. So that's the status of that significant item.
Could I ask, why does the recommendation from the fact finder not address a longer period of time?
I'm not certain that it can.
What was the question?
Whether it can extend beyond the 2 years of the arbitration package. I believe, Dooley, it's limited like the arbitration package, but I can make sure of that before we talk again. So anyway, you will get something from us on or before the 9th of January on that. The other items I have on my notes in my notes for tonight are very short. A couple of them are just nagging. Kevin Sutherland has emailed you the budget survey for 2013. Take 5 minutes, 10 minutes, fill it out. That's how we get better every year. It is multiple choice, but there are also some open-ended opportunities where if you just have thoughts on how we can make that process better, let us know and we try to incorporate that in the subsequent year's budget, and I think that's how we've made the improvements that we have. You should have also received something in your mailboxes within the last couple of weeks. It's an invitation to attend a planning meeting for an event that will include a viewing of the PBS series Race, the Power of Illusion. It's really a planning meeting for leaders to begin talking about how to use this vehicle to help area employers use that series as a vehicle to improve understanding about race. So take a look in your mailbox. That's an old-fashioned piece of paper that you should have gotten in your mailboxes here, and you're being asked to respond to that by January 5th. Last couple of small items. We're getting very close to move-in date for the COFA space. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
The COFA space, which will happen mid-month. I've asked Marsha Lynch to help us coordinate some kind of an event, a ribbon-cutting event, to commemorate the opening of that building. And as soon as that starts to take shape, we will advise you of that as well and seek your input in terms of what would work for time and date. I think the last thing that I'd like to say tonight, I don't know about you, but I forgot how to deal with snow over the course of the last year when it didn't snow. Fortunately, our highway people didn't. I thought our plow crews did a really good job responding to a significant accumulation of snow that came in a very short period of time right after the holidays. So I think we do want to acknowledge the work that they did during that very snowy night. I think our roads were done very well. There weren't any interruptions at all of work or service, so we owe them a bit of thanks for that. So that's my report.
Thanks very much, Joe. Questions? Peter first, and then Frank.
Joe, may I ask a question about the arbitration?
Sure.
That number that you quoted for those years, and I don't remember what the years were, but almost 3%, that was considerably higher than what we were paying our rest of our workforce, was it not?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because we have to put this into its context and remember the years that we're talking about, 2008, 2009. Arbitrator awarded 2.9% in 2008. Most of our other employees received 3% during that period. In the next year, the Road Patrol did a bit better under this than the other employees. They were awarded 2.9%. Most of our other employees got 2.25% that year. It was after that year that we began the series of zeros and bonuses and so on.
All right, thank you.
Frank.
Thanks, Martha. Joe, two things. First, with regard to the contract or the proposed contract, Brooke Jobin sent out an email within the last week or 10 days saying that the prescription drug participation number with anyone taking advantage of the county's plan has to pay depending on which category you're in. Mm-hmm. And then I have a second question. Will that contract be affected by the change? Because there were a couple of bumps in that.
You may recall, Frank, that in the contracts that we negotiated with CSEA white collar, blue collar, and that we gave to managers and the confidential employees piggybacked on that. There was also a change in the correction union co-pays. In each of those unions, so the large majority of our employees, there is a change in their drug co-pays effective January 1st of this year. And your actual co-pay plan will depend on what bargaining unit you're in. So corrections will be different than CSE white collar, for example. But in general, there will be a higher co-pay that starts January 1st of this year for all of our employees. Road Patrol, in this arbitration, will not be affected by that. Their co-pay stay as they are currently.
And is that because the contract years were prior to this change?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
The second question has to do with compensatory pay. Mm-hmm. Has the change that was reviewed by GO, has that all been implemented now?
No, it can't be until we go through that policy amendment process that it's going through right now. So after it came to GO, GO said, we're okay with this. Now begin the process of amending policy. That's the process that we're in right now. As it goes through internal review and goes through all the gyrations that we do before we amend policy. It will come back to the legislature when that's all done. And I think we're looking at, is it March or April of this year? March or April to bring it back. So we certainly haven't forgotten about that commitment. We're certainly on course to make that change so that in the future management employees will not receive compensation for accumulated comp time when they leave. That is still on course to be implemented.
What to do? Yeah. The only other comment I would make is there was apparently a breakdown in the internal email system because Jonathan did not get the email indicating that you and David were wearing similar ties, and it probably would be.
It's more of a gray hair thing than
is that what it is?
Direct.
Just an observation.
That was the group-wise update. It wasn't quite finished. So, all right, I'd like to have us take a 10-minute break, please, for a recess. So please be in your seats at 5 of 8.